This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 857, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Pick Week 857. It's our Thanksgiving episode, our post-Thanksgiving episode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
I would like to talk to you guys about making meaningful connections with brands on this Black Friday.
And joining us in the third chair, Dr. Ryan Haupt.
I'll just say there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, so I'll just counter Josh's message entirely.
And we are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics. We talk about those, pick the best one, yada, yada, yada. This is the post-Thanksgiving show. It's not going to be as tight and buttoned up as normal. I'm recording from my grandmother's apartment. Not normal setup. I can barely see this tiny monitor. Like, it's all... This chair squeaks. There's a phone. Like, we're just going to deal with it the best we can.
These sound like you problems, Connor.
These are a lot of... I got a lot of problems. did you guys get to read all your books?
Yes.
Pretty much all of them, yeah.
It was uncool of publishers this week to do what they did.
So many books, yeah.
There's a lot of books.
I read them all, but I can't say I read them at all in ideal conditions. Fair. So we're just going to roll with it. Sometimes the post-Thanksgiving show, 1 year Ron and I did it, it was like 25 minutes long. Just because we were just like, we had to get back to our families. We're going to do the best we can and get back to normal next week. In the meantime, Sears, there'll be a spoiler warning right here that warns you that this is a review show, and there will be spoilers. And this week, Ryan, you had the pick of the week.
I sure did. And I think anyone who saw the rundown of books coming out this week probably knew, you know, what one of the contenders was going to be. And it is indeed The Human Target, Book 9, story by Tom King, art by Greg Smallwood, letters by Clayton Cowles. And it was one of the earlier books I read in my stack, and it was a clear contender for pick of the week. It's got just a lot to love. But honestly, I think this book made a strong case for itself simply by Greg Smallwood's art on just the way their hair moves while they're driving alone. It's incredible.
Fair.
I cannot get over how good this book looks, how just it is hitting on every note that I need hit on. You've got a quick little pop in by Dr. Midnight. It's excellent in every sense.
You know, what's funny is that when this book shows up, I sometimes I wait a little because I'm like, you have to have it. It's not that I need to leave the best thing for last. It's that I just know I'm going to have to pay attention. And so there's a bunch of books I just breeze through. And and in that time, it tends to become a little intimidating to me for some reason. I'm like, all right, here we go. Let's do the thing. And then I open it and I see the first page and I was like, all right, this is magic. It's not hard. It's just good. And sometimes I equate those two. But that first page, I went, oh, God, I forgot. And then you're right back in it. But it's good.
Yeah, I mean, this was a stellar issue. And so the cover, you know, if you haven't, if somehow you haven't been following along, this is the murder mystery involving the Justice League International. And the cover is Christopher Chance, the Human Target, in the shadow of Batman. And you think, okay, well, obviously, Batman was a founding member of the JLI. He's an important aspect of it. So, of course, eventually he will have to show. And this whole issue was brilliant, I thought, because it was Christopher Chance is spiraling paranoia at thinking he was being followed by Batman. And we don't know, was he not? Probably not. But I just loved how he was convinced he was. And by Batman doing nothing else but being in his head sort of ruined his day. And I thought it was great.
I was really glad that I hadn't noticed that on the cover. Because I had to go through the sort of ambiguity. I was like, I think he's talking about Batman, but I'm not sure. And he doesn't say it until later. And it feels like the script was written in such a way that you didn't have a clue other than, you know, just knowing context. And I had to think, wait, Batman wasn't that because he punched Guy Gardner and that's been referenced in here. And it made it really fun. And it was that sort of mind's eye paranoia kind of thing. He beat that man up for no reason.
And the cover is a really cool, like, kind of North by Northwest look of Christopher Chance running away from the shadow of the Bat. And I think it clicked for me before they got to the diner. But then when he saw the guy sitting next to him and said, well, he doesn't have the match, but I'm pretty sure that's Batman as matches Malone. So, like, Christopher Chance even knows Batman's disguises and is psyching himself out about them. Just really, really
well, it's good. Funny you mentioned that because I had a whole, you know, there's a very Cary Grant thing with Christopher Chance in this issue particularly. So it makes sense that North by Northwest would be referenced on the cover. But there was a great moment towards the end where he's explaining his paranoia to Ice. And she's like, well, who's better than you? Who's smarter than you? And he says, Batman. Batman's better than me. And there's a blank panel in the next one. She's just like, fuck. You know, it's like she knows. Now she realizes it's two. And but then, you know, we even mentioned the big reveal here, which is revealed after Christopher Chance thinks while Ice is asleep, and that is that Guy Gardner is actually alive.
Right. He's assuming, like, it's that whole, like, but he thinks, but he doesn't know that I know. You know, it's that very kind of convoluted logic. And one scene before we get to the very end of the book I particularly loved is when they try to, like, essentially call Batman's bluff by wrecking their own car. Like, well, maybe if it looks like we're going to die, he'll come save us. And then that'll reveal that he's been tailing us this entire time. So there's just lots of smart little details like that. But then Christopher Chance convinces himself that Batman is not really coming to get him because Batman himself has figured out the deeper truth, which is that they didn't really kill Guy Gardner, which I have no clue how they're going to get around his frozen, shattered corpse on that one.
What I didn't know is that Ice didn't know that he had the 12 days.
I think I didn't realize that either. I think that was something that surprised me in reading this too, Josh.
I think I thought that was just understood because otherwise, why is she? Then she's just hanging out with him, which is kind of sweet, really. Yeah, Connor, did you know that?
I didn't realize it either, but I guess it makes sense. Who else would know specifically? I mean, Dr. Midnight and him and. I don't think he's really told anybody. He's told he was poisoned.
But with Dr. Midnight.
Like, maybe, you know, she was in the waiting room with patient, Dr. Midnight's owl.
Patient Dr. Confidentiality.
How pleasurable is sex on an ice bed?
I had this thought. I thought, none of that furniture. There's no way. There's no way that you can. I mean, you know the science, Ryan. Slush? How would you make that pliable?
I don't know. It wouldn't be comfortable for him, I would believe. Couldn't believe. No. I mean, maybe whatever's in his flask must be really good stuff.
What we're learning is that he's super into her, and so he's willing to put up with a lot. And then the question is, well, after those 12 days, how long would that really last? Listen, can we get a couch? Can we just...
I mean, she would be into it because she's nice. Well, sure. I was going to say ice goddess, right. But they've retconned that. But that explains why he's still awake in the ice house as opposed to sleeping in the ice bed.
Yeah.
But I think this final page, I think, makes – so this is issue 9 of 12. So we're basically at the start of the final act of the story. And it seems to me that – I mean, this could totally be wrong. We're making a lot of assumptions in a book where everybody can make assumptions is wrong. But I've always been suspicious of ice because – if I've read every book that Raymond Chandler's ever written, and it's usually the woman. She's usually involved. The woman who comes to the office and asks for the PI's help is usually always involved in the crime.
And I thought about that too. And the thing that I keep going back to is that this is so well done that if she crosses him, it's going to wreck me. Like, I can't. It's going to make me so sad because, like, he tells her he loves her in this one, and it's that I loved. I thought that scene was really well done with, like, her head on his shoulder, and he's like, "I love you." That's all. I fucked up, and. I don't know. He's so sweet on her. And so far she hasn't dropped too many hints that at least not that I've seen, but I'm sure in hindsight, it'll all be clear. And I don't know. I don't want it to go that way, but I'm sure you're probably right, Connor.
Well, if you look at the framing of the final panel where he reveals that Guy Gardner's alive, she's in the foreground sleeping on the ice bed, looking very comfortable. Like it's a Sealy, Certamatic, whatever those mattresses are. And he's in the background looking at her. And while he says, because he figured out Guy Gardner's still alive. So that would imply to me from the framing that she doesn't know that he's still alive, which means there's a reason why she doesn't know. There's a reason why Christopher Chance faked it and didn't tell her.
Then he knows he has a reason to suspect her too.
Right.
Which would be a thing.
But then three more issues. So I could, you know, it could be put in its head and I could be wrong and it'd be great, you know, because I, as you said, Ryan, I love their relationship, even though the whole time I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. This is so good. Look at the panel at the top of that final page where Christopher Chance is looking through the window of the mm-hmm. ice house. His image is warped as you would see through ice. Like the amount of consideration in this book is out of this world.
Well, and as soon as they're in the ice house, you can see his breath in every panel and not hers. Because yeah. She's not, you know, she's not at a human temperature. She's at the temperature of the ice.
So good.
Is there any chance that Greg Smallwood doesn't win an Eisner for this?
Every time we say that, we're wrong. But I can't imagine. I can't imagine it.
If someone else does win an Eisner, it will be bullshit.
How do we get on the committee? How do we put our thumb on the scale?
Listen, we do not have a lot of sway with the Eisner folk. That is historically...
We've given up with that.
Right.
It's very good. I love the mounting paranoia, his spiraling, you know, where it sort of climaxes where it beats up that poor guy in the diner for no reason, thinking he's Batman. Like, you know,
Which is reminiscent of Superman 2, by the way.
It's very much. And
I think it's the same. It might even be the same set. I don't know.
What's great about it is I had the same realization that he did before he said it, which was the guy punches him. And then it doesn't really affect him. I thought, if Batman punched you like that, you'd be on the floor.
Right.
And he punches the guy. And then he realizes, oh, shit, wait a minute. That guy hit me and it didn't hurt. This is not Batman. This is just brilliant. This book is fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And it's beautiful. And I want to live in this world.
Are these pages only in digital?
What do you mean? Yeah. Like, Smallwood draws digitally. Yeah.
Like, look at page 15. And tell me that you wouldn't want that on your wall.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Just a print of that.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Very good.
I love that you can zoom in. I don't mean like literally, but you can kind of look at any given detail on any panel or page, and it's usually something interesting. Like you look at like the hair on the guy at the bar, and it's just so rough. You know, it's a scribble. It goes over the lines where it's supposed to, but it works, you know. And that's, you know, the same, like he's got like a little bit of food on his fork, but all the proportions and all of the, you know, angles that we're looking at it are accurate. Like,
right.
the anatomy and perspective on this is, we're not even talking about that because it's just so good you don't need to, but it's gorgeous. His hands, he does great hands. Anyway.
You know you've got a good girlfriend when she brings your flask to the doctor's office.
I do have a real soft spot for Dr. Midnight. He's one of my favorite, like, weird, obscure DC characters.
Oh, yeah. And what's great about this book is it makes no... I mean, it's a black label book, so it doesn't matter. But it makes no sense within the continuity of what's going on in DC right now.
That's right, because Dr. Midnight's some other person now. But.
So anyway, I mean, this was easy. You said
you know you have a good doctor when he's also like, yeah, give him the liquor.
Well, he knows he's going to die, so might as well let him drink through
it. Or a bad doctor. Like, he needed it. Cough, cough, cough. Take this.
So I apologize for what's about to happen, Ryan. So G.I. Joe, other than, again, I guess I don't apologize because I see you put a Power Ranger book on the rundown. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero.
I finally was able to balance the scales. We finally had a week where the two came out.
G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, number 300 from IDW, the final issue in the Larry Hama saga, which began in the early 80s at Marvel, went to Devil's Due. Is that the one, Josh?
Yep.
And then IDW. I am, Josh, I wish you could have seen my face when I read this book.
I can picture it fairly easily.
I think I turned the iPad around to see if there was something missing on the back. The cover. The cover is this amazing double page spread. I think it's every G.I. Joe and Cobra character that's ever been.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, there's even a credit for research.
Yeah.
Like there was research. Two people, Dustin McCoy and Daniel Thomas, like, had to give the research to them to be able to do this.
Including all the dogs and Hawk's Hawk.
Oh yeah, look at that.
Spirit's Hawk, like all everything's Spirit's Eagle. That's an eagle. I'm tired.
Eagle is Freedom. Then you got Freedom. Timber. Right. Then you got Law. Then you got not Mutt. What was Mutt's dog's name?
I don't remember what his dog's name was.
Mutt and not Jeff. And then there's a bobcat. I don't know that one.
Why is there a mime?
Because at some point
there was
they had an extra slot that year's lineup.
Okay, so
was like, how about a mime? And then they all laughed and were like, "No, seriously."
In the last issue, so Josh and I have been reading every issue of this final arc, and then the last issue, it was discovered that Dr. Mindbender still had the original Snake Eyes' consciousness from that machine that where they put him in the early in the Marvel run. And so they have resurrected a cloned version of Snake Eyes with his original consciousness and memories. So it's basically they've resurrected the sort of like the mid 80s Snake Eyes here. And he's just going on a Cobra killing spree in this lab. No one can stop him. And including the two troopers who narrate the entire battle, which was annoying, but also kind of funny. I was a little surprised by this issue, Josh. What did you think about it overall?
I mean, I hate to get crude.
Yeah.
But I feel like the word blue balls is probably the best way to describe what this felt like. I went, what? Basically, Snake Eyes, they think that he's programmed. We know he isn't. He goes and just slaughters every slaughters. I was like, well, this is an all ages book, I thought. And
with his two katana swords, he just takes them all out.
Everybody's super happy. There's a bit where he finally runs into Scarlet, and they did the classic, like, don't show his face thing, which I was so happy about. And then, you know, they're all like ready for the final assault, and the book's over.
Yes.
And I went back to the beginning. I was like, it's 300, but that was the last. And it's just to be continued with the. There's a word for the question mark and Intera Slam or Intera Bang. It's called an Intera Bang. I learned that this week.
So yes. So the issue ends on a cliffhanger, which is will cause me to be like, wait a minute, what is there? Are there more issues? I looked in the back, and obviously it says in the letters column, like, this is it. This is the end of Hama's run. And I was like, wait, what? So
I don't know what's coming next. Thing is, I have a feeling Larry just might. I mean, that was one heck of a cliffhanger we had just ended on, don't you think? Something tells me this story ain't over yet, Yojo.
So maybe another publisher's picking it up, but...
Oh, Well...
Yeah. It seemed like a shitty way to do it if that's what was happening. Because basically, the reason why you and I read this is because it was advertised as the final arc of Larry Hama's G.I. Joe run.
Right.
Anyway, the Scarlet... Snake Eyes bit was my favorite bit of the week. Like, you know, when she finds out that he's back through cloning, she and Stalker and Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow was already on the island. She and Stalker basically say we're going down to save him, and they do. And it ends up being that the original team from Vietnam plus Scarlet. So that dude in the yellow hair with the red bandana, who's the father of the Snake Eyes, the fake Snake Eyes.
It's like Tim or Bill or something, right?
He was in that unit.
I remember. I can see it.
Once they said it here, I was like, oh, right. That was a dude with blonde hair and a red bandana. So that yep. basically the entire unit, which was Stalker, Storm Shadow, Snake Eyes, and this dude were reunited with Scarlet to rescue them. And
the dude is Sean's dad.
Yes.
And Sean is the new Snake Eyes, N-U umlaut. A couple of things here. Mm-hmm. One is that I like that the whole team on the hovercraft is all the sea guys. So there's Cutter, and then the other is Deep Six, and I was like, oh yeah, he came with the shark, and then of course Shipwreck, and then also the little things that they stand in, the little holes they stand in, apparently are not as they're much more shallow than I thought. Like the guns are at belt level, and I was like, you should let them dig in for a little more cover there.
Yeah,
I thought that was strange. Then I completely forgot that the whale or the hovercraft, which was one of my prestige toys, could go on land, because I'm like, oh no, they're penned in, and they just drive through the forest, and I was like, yes. And also, it's so good. It blows up a tank. I don't know how that works, but whatever.
Right.
At one point, he says, I'm going to arm the missiles. I was like, oh, right, it has missiles. And then a couple other things. And then normally, the rule of thumb is that if you have a bad guy, they should stay a bad guy, and you don't try to make them good. And that is not the case with Storm Shadow, who's now fully on the good guy side, and Laura, the Crimson Guard with an eye patch lady. Who may be Cobra Commander's daughter?
Yeah, she is. I mean, she looks just like, if you remember, his son, was it Chris?
Chris.
Had an eye patch as well, so I assume that's the signifier. Apparently I did Cobra like that Commander at one point. They're like, is that Cobra Commander?
Yeah.
It was fun. And then I was annoyed, like you said, it was a bit of comic book blue balls when I was like, wait a minute, the arc's not over? So I don't know what's happening.
I mean, you could do it like, I don't know, Butch and Sundance or something. It wasn't really that. It was like, I want to see them take the casino. I don't need to see what happens next.
And I'm also fine with it being like, it's a never-ending battle, so it's not
sure.
Gonna,
that's true.
And that's fine, but it just, that wasn't the ending of the story. It was like, this plane is going down and it's going to crash into the casino. Like, that's not really like, you know, the ending of the Justice League Unlimited cartoon was the Justice League all running out to fight a new threat. Mm-hmm. And it was like, that's fine because the battle's never ending. But that wasn't this. So it's weird.
Let's talk about the problem here is that we have Cold Slither playing through December, which brings up a lot of questions. Cold Slither, of course, is a fake band comprised of Dreadnoks, but now they are playing here. Are they the actual Dreadnoks, or is this more like one of those bands that switches members out constantly, like a Boston or a Journey.
Right. And if they only play, does that mean they don't get to do any dreadknocking?
Right. Or do they have to do double duty? And if so, are they being paid for both, or they just really love being in Cold Slither, or vice versa?
Right. It's like they do the wind down.
That run is going to go short. Did Cold Slither have like a hit? Like, was their deception so good that people are like, oh man, I love Cold Slither. What happened to them? It's like, turned out they were terrorists.
I'm pretty sure there's probably a Reddit group somewhere that's the big Cold Slither fans, and that sort of kept the fandom going.
Slither, you'll be seeing us soon. I don't remember the other, but I remember the melody.
I mean, it was really fun, and I just don't know that certain things paid off. Like, I don't know that Genghis Khan paid off in any meaningful way.
Well, it was ridiculous.
Right, but like again, because this arc didn't really come to an end, is he still just the leader of Cobra? I guess
the zombie nuke. He just turned into Serpentor in this. It's like, oh, he's just Serpentor now. And the zombie nuke, they never paid that off either.
There was a certain point where I was like 3/4 of the way through this, and I said, "There's no way this can end. What's going on?" And then it didn't.
I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. Maybe that'll be interesting.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm not going to check it out if it continues, but Larry Hama has to be writing it.
If nothing else for these conversations, it was worth it. If this is all that happened, it was great.
I mean, it was worth it for me for Snake Eyes and Scarlet reuniting.
Yep.
You know,
Then we got a lesson about stopping bleeding at the end, which I couldn't tell was serious or silly until the very end. I was like, well, it's kind of both.
Let's talk about Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number one from Boom Studios, written by Jason Aaron with art by Alexander
Tevenki,
and a little bit by Nick Dragotta at the end. This is Jason Aaron's big new indie book, tellingly not an image. Is that Boom?
Should I finish my game of Free Cell or want me to come back in the conversation? I mean, I read this book, so I can come back in, but I was almost done. I was hoping you guys could drag out that conversation just a little longer for me to finish.
But that's okay. I've got my Marvel Snap ready for the Power Rangers, so we are good to go.
So, thoughts on Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number one.
I hate to say it, but the first thing that I thought is, so does that mean he'll finish it because he's with like a real publisher?
Oh, stop. Which isn't to Image say, is a real publisher.
I know, but they're not, editorially, they're not. Like, right. It's not the same thing. They're not building, the creators are building their schedules for the most part, but here, like, the publishing arm is a fully...
Yes. This is more infrastructure than Image does, yes.
Yeah, and so... I hope he finishes it because he's left us in the lurch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think.
Well, almost all those books from that Boom left us in the lurch unless Remender was writing them.
Right. No, I know that. But like, has he finished any of his indie projects? I don't think he has. The Goddamn didn't finish.
Southern Bastards didn't finish.
And then there was the other one he did with Dennis Hallam. That did.
The one in the sea, space sea.
Yeah. Sea of Stars. Okay. So either way, that's I'm saying that was my first thought, but whatever, put that aside. If you told me that this was Jason Aaron, I wouldn't have believed you.
Mm.
Except.
It had a Remender-esque vibe to it.
Yeah, it had something like the nerdy kid is a very not Jason Aaron character to me. However, thematically, it's very similar to Sea of Stars. It's very similar to The Goddamned in that there's a young person over their head out in a dangerous world. It's the same thing.
Right.
But the tone was different, I thought. And actually oddly hopeful for an apocalypse book. It's just a nerd who fell in love with a girl. You know, partially because she's interesting, partially because there are no other girls.
Or people. Really?
Yeah.
So it opens with this young girl who's rowing her way through the wasteland sea, which is full of garbage and other things. And she comes across this building in which this young boy lives in sort of Home Alone-esque security. And they end up going off together at the end. It's a fairly simple setup for the first issue. It's mostly just like boy meets girl and they decide to go off together. Not necessarily they decide to. He follows her out.
He tags along. I felt
a show with Will Forte, whatever that one.
Last Man on Earth. Excellent show. I rewatched it during the pandemic, and the number of things they got right in that show. There's a flashback episode where it shows like the early days of the virus ruining the world, and like people are making fun of folks wearing masks at the grocery store, talking about secret vaccines. Like, it's incredible. I loved the kids. I loved Maceo's, Mace's backpack of all the things.
Mm-hmm.
You sure it's Maceo?
Yes, yeah. Maceo Parker, famous musician, bass player, I think. No, trumpet. Sorry.
Either way, I loved the backpack of many things: snowshoes, skateboards, banjos.
It's all of his things. Yeah,
it basically sounds like my room.
No, I mean, but like that's what goes through my head when I start packing. I'm like, well, it might snow. Better toss some snowshoes on here.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't a whole lot here. We flash forward at the end many years later, and Maceo is an old grizzled man without an arm being tortured by some people who want to know where she is. They're looking for her?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Her name is...
They're looking for Esmeralda, yeah.
Esmeralda.
Yeah. I didn't want that.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. It sort of...
Undercut.
Similar to the Thor book he did, where you knew the ending, which didn't hurt it, but you know now I know he survived, so I don't have to worry about him.
Yeah, but also you know like you want to see the journey, but knowing where knowing where the journey ends makes it a little less compelling, I guess, in a way. Like I thought, well, okay, in the first part of the book is these people meet each other and they start off on an adventure. And I mean, how many times have we seen the, you know, a person joins up in the adventure and the other one who's totally prepared for it is like, oh, don't come with me. You know, we've seen that a lot. But, you know, I want to give that time. I want to see how that relationship goes. But now we know. So we know something. We didn't, you know, that was kind of. And what I actually got worried about, I was like, is this going to be the book? Are we just skipping the first part now?
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that was how I took it. But that's not necessarily true.
I don't think it's going to be the case, no.
That would definitely affect my sticking with it, which I know is not something we declare for all books, but...
You can talk about it here.
It's a number. I feel like it's relevant to any number one we discuss.
I thought it was good. I thought it was really well done. It was really professional. A lot of the books that will come out from... You know, it's the same thing like when Scott Snyder shows up on that IDW book, like, oh, this is a really well done book by a professional. This is the same thing with that. Like, you just, you know, there's a real difference between guys who sort of worked at the big publishers for a while and some of the indie stuff. There just is. Like, you're just better at structure and understanding what it is you're trying to get to. The concept isn't always as interesting. Like, but I don't know. I don't know what it is yet. So it's not like if it's a Batman book, like I have something to hang on to. You know, I know it's going to be like here, I'd have to trust the creator to do a thing that's interesting. And I hope it is. I'm not sure it is yet, but I hope it is.
Yeah. I'm interested. I didn't love it. I liked it. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly interested enough to keep reading it.
Exact same.
Yeah.
A book I really, really enjoyed more than I expected to was Star Wars Yoda number one by Kevon Scott, Nico Leone, Donna Sanchez Almara, and Joe Carmagna. And it's just a little Yoda story. And I didn't know I needed this in my life, but I read it and greatly, greatly enjoyed it.
I wouldn't have read it. I every time a new Star Wars book comes out, I approach it with a 90-10. Like, this is a 10% chance I'm going to check this up. But I saw Nico Leone on art and I went, I kind of want to see what that looks like. And because I don't know who Kevon Scott is. And yeah, it was good because it was just like, what would it look like if Yoda had an adventure on some world somewhere? And it doesn't change his story. It doesn't explain anything. It's just like, let's imagine him in this place doing this thing. I liked a lot of the choices that were made. Like, he was high up there and like, you can't go. And he's like, who do you say I can't go? I'm going. Like, they got a distress sequence. They got a distress signal from some world. People were being attacked, random aliens. I mean, again, we've seen the setup 1,000 times.
And it starts with him, you know, remembering this story from his little hut in Dagobah. And like, as soon as I saw the little hut in that first page, I was like, oh, here we go. I kind of already like this. And the world he goes to is very like Pandora. It's got like these Navi looking aliens that are fighting off these bigger, meaner aliens. It's almost like an episode of Samurai Jack. And the council's like, Yoda, you're not the guy for this. And he's like, the hell you say? I'm Yoda.
This story was in The Mandalorian as well, I believe.
Yeah, it's very similar to a very similar setup.
So for me, so I'll start with my one little criticism is that like he stopped doing Yoda speak in the middle of it and then went back to it. I was like, he's just forming normal sentences. You got to put in the effort here. You can't have Etrigan just talking normal.
Right.
But really the thing that brought me to the top though, is like, the art was spectacular. It was Nico Leone really good to delivered.
Look at. Yeah.
It was, I mean, if that's all that I had read this for, it would have been enough. It was wonderful. It was beautiful.
And the lightsaber effects were really well done. There's the do we call it the Mitch Gerads crudité swoop when he like reholsters his lightsaber?
Oh, now you know what I'm talking about,
Josh, right?
Kind of. Where? Give me a page.
Yeah, when he showed the speed line.
Yeah, the speed line on I think it's page 25 or so where he force holsters his lightsaber back onto his belt and it has the little Mitch Gerads speed line.
The chip dip.
Yes.
Yep. Oh, that's great. No, you're right. The lighting is actually spectacular in this. I don't know this colorist, Sanchez Almara, but the color is actually wonderful and the lighting effects from the lightsaber. Yeah, it's a gorgeous book. I'm actually really glad I read it.
Me too.
And I'm not going to walk away with it. It's
to be continued. So Yoda's going to stay on this island for a little while, on this little off-world place, and help these aliens continue to be ready to fight off these bigger and badder invaders.
Yeah, and that kid's going to be a Jedi. There's no way he'll find a Jedi down there, obviously. Yeah, it was a nice little bit.
I agree.
Dark Spaces Wildfire number 5. We talked about Scott Snyder just a minute ago at IDW. This is the final issue of his firefighter miniseries crime story that I only picked up reading because Josh talked about it. I wouldn't have done it otherwise because the title does not tell you anything about it. It seemed like a sci-fi book to me. Anyway, I liked this mini a lot. I liked the art from Hayden Sherman a lot. I actually really liked the fake ending more than the real ending. I preferred the fake ending in this particular story.
I prefer fake endings in general.
Well, the whole thing was there's been a heist in the middle of this wildfire, and the crew of prisoners who are fighting the fire, because if you don't know, a lot of wildfire fighting in California is done by inmates. And we won't even get into how fucked up that is. But
$3 a day.
There's a crypto heist happening in the middle of it. I guess none of them heard about crypto crashing. But it turns out one of the people is involved. One of the people in the crew is the mastermind of the heist. And here, they're going to escape. They're going to use the woman's plan to escape themselves and live in luxury in the Philippines or wherever it is. And that doesn't actually happen. But there's a moment where we see it happening, and it's a fantasy. And I actually really liked it as sort of a Shawshank Redemption kind of ending, where they got to escape their lives and of hardship and live. And that's not what happens. And that was a bummer, but I got it. I enjoyed it.
I think I did too. I think it's a little heavy on the metaphor, but I think that that's actually what it was. So it's hard to sort of remove it from that. I think that the art got better. Hayden Sherman, I think, I can look at it, seemed to learn a lot through the process of this, so that a lot of times you'll see it'll go the other way. Like, it's really strong in the beginning, they're putting everything into it, and then by the end, it's they're rushing. And it's the other way. Like, in the beginning, the art was interesting but lacking some of the fundamentals, and then by the end, I felt it was stronger. Character differentiation was different. The layouts, which were really inventive and aspirational in the beginning, I think we're smoothed out. The storytelling got better. And I think that means a lot. Also, I just like to compliment the bravery of making this a 5-issue miniseries. It did not need one more page. It stopped when it did. Like, stretching it out to 6 would have been dumb. It was constructed correctly.
Well, 5 is the new 6. That's the new length now. So it is what it is. The Amazing Spider-Man 908. Zeb Wells and four artists, Mike Dowling, Kyle Hotz, Terry Dodson, and Ryan Stegman, tell a year in the life of these characters. I was not happy we came back to Ben Reilly.
I remembered we left. I was like, all right, we left off with him being a bad guy. And I was like, ugh.
If you recall, Josh and I enjoyed that Ben Reilly story for the most part. Mm-hmm. Not a huge Ben Reilly fan personally, but it ended up being interesting. It left him as a pure villain, and I proceeded to forget he existed.
Which is correct.
When I opened this book up, I went, oh, no. And now we see that they're bringing it back in a big way.
And in my least favorite bunch of stuff. I was like, is that – that's Madeline Pryor?
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally comic book. Like, there's a certain section of fans who are going to love this. And it's not, I'm not even saying it's bad. I think it was actually pretty good. I just am not interested in. I will say the editorial choice of Kyle Hotz on this Limbo sequences is exactly correct. He's awesome at what he did there. And even though I'm not interested in that at all, it was perfect and really, did its job extraordinarily well.
I mean, the pairing of Ben Reilly and Madeline Pryor was interesting in that they're both clones of established heroes. Yeah. So that was like, okay, that's fairly interesting. I just don't care. We had like a full year with Ben Reilly, and it was enough. You managed to make him interesting. Great, congratulations. Now don't bring him back for a while.
I think the thing is, if this was a side series, like, we did a lot of like, why isn't this in the main book?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is this in the main book?
Right.
Like, we had a nice Peter Parker story going. We still don't know what the mystery is about what he did. Let's stick on. You have John Romita Jr. We're doing Spider-Man over here.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
We just did this.
I don't want this. We did this, but we did a better version. This is a worse version of this. It was a good, it was good. It wasn't, I'm not like, oh, this sucked. It's just not, it's just like, I don't like salsa music. That's not true. It makes you move. You know what I mean? Like, it's not my genre.
You try keeping your hips in place.
I was asked on the Discord about this new costume for Chasm, and the main problem with it is this. It's a spider-like animal because it's got the eight legs, but it has a middle section thorax, which arachnids don't have, insects have. So it's like even the weird logo design on the costume is not working for me.
And Ryan wins the Nerd of the Week comment. He did it, everyone.
That is
you know what the thing about this, you know what this comic is like? This comic book is like the return of the mullet. This is all shit from the 90s with 90s sense of Chasm with the glowy McFarlane costume. This is just the 90s. This is coming back around. Let's try this thing again, you know, that those of us who are around don't want back. But there's fans of it. There's fans of the prequel trilogy. You know,
fans of the mullet.
Yep. Oh, God.
So Ben's girlfriend / wife is his wife or girlfriend?
Wife, I think.
She gets her own villain identity and powers.
It has
nothing to do with Chasm. Like, you'd think they'd be sort of related. She's a Halloween themed villain, and he is a bug. Like, it was just weird.
She has masks. That's why. I actually thought that was a pretty cool concept. She has the different masks. I was like, did you fuck her face up? And I was like, oh, no, they're just masks. Because I wouldn't want to fuck her face up because there's not enough redheads in the Marvel Universe.
I mean, I think Josh is exactly correct. Like, from a technical standpoint, this was a good issue. Like, the writing was strong. The art, all the different art styles really worked. And it was nice seeing Ryan Stegman here. But I just read the whole thing going, no, 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 no. Every turn, page turn, no. And so, yeah, you know, you're totally right. I mean, the 90s have been back in terms of fashion and culture for a while. And now it's sort of fully invaded the comics world. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, going from the 90s to the early aughts, but still a hot Marvel redhead is involved. We have the final issue of the Guinness Vale Captain Marvel miniseries that Peter David has been writing. And I was really excited for this when it came out. I think Connor and I talked about it on one of the earlier issues.
I've been reading it. I saw the script and I was like, I didn't put this here because I assumed no one else was reading it.
You guys talked about the first issue when I was out, and I read it also.
And unfortunately, I thought this ended on a bit of a whimper. I didn't think this ended as strongly as it could have. If anything, it felt like the end of a first arc that would set up a series. So to realize that this was the end of this miniseries and we weren't necessarily getting another book, I was kind of like, oh, I kind of like where this book ended was kind of where I wanted the series, what I wanted the book to be from the first page, not the last page, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, I mean, it's still set up that this is how they do things. Certainly everything Peter David has done over the past few years is in little chunks, and then the next one will come out and it'll be, you know, Captain Marvel colon something else.
This was definitely of the ones he's done recently, the one I was least enjoying, and also the one when this issue was out this week, I thought, did I read the last issue? Like, it did. Mm-hmm. The story didn't stick with me at all. I did read them. I read every issue. But I never read this character to begin with. I read this on the strength of Peter David's Maestro book and to some extent his Fantastic Four miniseries.
He was in Avengers Forever that we did the books.
He was. The character was. I didn't read his solo stuff in the early 2000s.
And the thing that I think this miniseries was missing that was something I enjoyed about his solo stuff is that, like, Guinness Vale is supposed to be a pretty unhinged character, pretty unhinged guy. Like, he's not supposed to be someone you can super rely on, but is incredibly powerful. And so it's sort of like the dog from the pound that you don't know is maybe going to bite you or maybe going to help you. You just can't quite tell with Guinness Vale. And that I didn't think was really in this story in a way that I'm used to seeing. So maybe if we get another miniseries, it'll be a little bit more what I was looking for in this. I didn't not enjoy this. I still am glad I read this, but I agree of the sort of Peter David goes back to some of his old characters miniseries that we've been getting. I think this is unfortunately one of the weaker ones.
So I wanted to correct you and say it's Guinness Vale, but that's just how I say it. I have no idea what's correct.
I always say Guinness Vale too, but who knows?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like I go back and forth in myself. Yeah. I don't think I'm consistent.
But there's no way to know. This was like before podcasting. We did not pronounce anybody's name. And comic creators would be like, you said his name wrong. I was like, how the fuck should I know?
Well, I've never seen it on the page. I mean, yeah, I deal with that in many aspects of my life because there's plenty of like fossil taxa that people only know from reading about them in books. And so when we get together at a conference, I say, oh, yeah, did you see that new Diplodocus paper? You mean Diplodocus? Like, I don't know. It's all just big archosaurs.
Is Rick Jones sporting an anti-mullet? Someone explain this hair to me.
I mean, it's not of today. It's almost like a Back to the Future 50s haircut.
It's sort of the floppy haired 90s, like who was Will Friedle in Boy Meets World.
Yeah, but even that hair, whole head was long. Here, only his bangs are super long. Like that, in the 90s, the floppy hair was just long hair.
Right.
No, I think there was definitely a long front hair period.
It may be slightly, not like this, not where his bangs are coming down to his chin.
Not like this.
Especially speaking of not like this, let's go.
Oh, come on. All right. Power Rangers 102. This is the creative team, the new creative team, Melissa Flores, Simona Di Gianfelis, Raul Angulo, and Ed Dukeshire on letters. This issue wasn't actually particularly noteworthy. The Rangers have gone to the moon because Lord Zedd has put out a distress signal, and even though he's one of their greatest adversaries, they feel compelled to be the good guys and go, if he's in distress, let's go see what it's about. So they fly the Dragonzord up there in its flying mode, and it crashes, and they come upon a resurrected Rita Repulsa, who's gotten a power-up and now goes by the sobriquet Mistress Vile. And the Power Rangers fight and do very badly, actually, and they barely escape by stealing Lord Zedd's droid, Serpentera, which I remember from the show, but I had to look up the name. I could not remember the name. It's like an extra big Dragonzord. And what ends up happening is Matt, the Green Ranger, stays behind to give the other Rangers time to escape, and then they crash Lord Zedd's droid back into Earth, so they have no way of going back to the moon to rescue Matt, because the Dragonzord is up there and Serpenta is crashed. But Zedd is now working with the Rangers against Rita, and Rita has Matt in her clutches. And as we all remember, Rita was the original creator of the Green Ranger power coin, so she's probably going to get up to something nefarious with now having him as her captor. So I think, you know, we all understand the stakes here. We all know what's going on. It's all very clear. And I continue to enjoy this series.
Can you keep going? I'm almost done.
Yeah, so one other thing I wanted to point out, it's not a fun thing to point out, but one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Power Rangers this week is Jason David Frank, the Green Ranger Tommy Oliver, considered by many to be the greatest Ranger to ever hold the power coin, died by suicide a couple of days ago, and that really sucks. And I know we sort of do the Power Rangers thing tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but...
Yeah, you kind of ruined my joke here.
Honestly. Yeah, I was still really sad to learn that, and so I know that we sometimes advertise for better health here, but better health is not a crisis line. So if you are in crisis and need to talk to somebody, they recently made 988, the suicide and crisis lifeline. So it's available in English and Spanish. And I hope if people need it, they take advantage of that resource or whatever other resources they have to not get to that point. So it's kind of a sad week for the Power Rangers fandom. And I just wanted to say that I was sad too.
Well, those are the books we wanted to talk about. It was, as I said, it was an unusual week. Thanksgiving week's always tough for comics reading, comics reviewing. But those are the books we wanted to talk about. There's a lot of books that came out, but we always have the patron pick to discuss, and that's over at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every person who's a patron of the show can vote to add a book to the rundown. We thank all those who took time out of their Thanksgiving holiday plans. And I keep saying that not all of our listeners are American, but most of them are. So that's why we keep saying that. Their Thanksgiving plans to vote. We appreciate it. And this week's winner was Doctor Strange Fall Sunrise, number 1 of 4, from Trad Moore and I assume his wife Heather Moore on colors and letters by Clayton Cowles with Trad Moore. Trad Moore did the art, he did the writing, and he did partially the letters. And this was a Doctor Strange miniseries that I had. It was a victim of the circumstance. I started to read it when I was really, really tired from traveling. I didn't make it more than a few pages because there's a lot here, and I just, my brain was fried. And then I picked it up again a couple of nights later, yeah, like 2 a.m. when I couldn't sleep because there was loud noises outside of the apartment I'm in, and I just couldn't. It wasn't ideal conditions for this book, and so I think it probably negatively affected my opinion of it. But what did you guys think?
I think you're being quite forgiving. I read it under completely normal circumstances. I don't want to be mean, but I don't know who this was for. I don't know what the point was. I got nothing out of it. And I recognized early on, I was like, oh, this is not your kind of thing. And so I doubled down on my attention, trying to make sure that I was giving it a fair shake, because sometimes I can see something, I go, this is dumb. And then all I do is see what's dumb about it going forward. But it's nothing I like. I don't have a good thing to say about it other than I think it was thoughtful. And if it's, you know, there's somebody that this appeals to, then maybe they'd be into it. But I got nothing to grab onto. I couldn't even tell you what it was.
I thought it was beautiful. I really like Tradmore.
It was pretty to look at.
I like Tradmore's art a lot. And he doesn't do a ton of stuff, but when he does, I think it's always exciting. He does a lot of little panels. He did, which one of those Marvel look back books did he do? Did he do Fantastic Four or did he do Hulk? The Grand Design books. He did one of those. Anyway, I think his art's gorgeous. I just didn't get anything from the story. I was confused. I couldn't tell you what it was about.
I don't feel like I was confused because I kind of got what was going on, but there wasn't any narrative hook that I could tell. There was no characters. Like, it was like a poem. And I don't mean that like I think it was literally like written like a poem. It wasn't written in traditional narrative. And from there, I just don't know what, I don't know what it was trying to do.
Yeah. It seemed like Dr. Strange woke up in some weird dimensional world and he's just trying to get out of it or survive. That's what I took from it. But again, I was reading it in chunks and in less than ideal conditions. But
it was like in a dream state or a hallucinogenic state. Like it wasn't, you know, and I don't need everything spelled out for me. It's not it. But I just, I don't know. It's the thing I keep, I was like, I don't know what the hook is here. I don't know what it is I'm supposed to care about other than Doctor Strange is lost in a world. He's thinking about having lost his hands, and there's lots of people around who either don't understand him or want to hurt him or both.
Right.
And that doesn't bring, like, the prose itself wasn't really strong enough for me to bring through that. And then it just leaves you with the art. And to me, I know what you're saying about it, but the art seemed to echo the story. And so therefore, I didn't know what it was trying to tell me. I want to stop going on and on about it in the same way, but that's where I was.
Ryan, what did you think overall?
Like I said, very pretty to look at. I think I considered doing what Josh did, where I was like, I'm going to go back and redouble my efforts to really capture what's going on here. Or I think what I kind of did is like, I'm just going to let this wash over me and sort of see if I come to the other side of it with any sort of understanding of what happened or what was going on. There's that excellent anthology of animated shorts that takes place in between the two Matrix movies, the Animatrix. And there's one of those where it's a bunch of humans convincing one of the machines through sort of a shared hallucinatory experience to join the human side and go against the machines. And this was very reminiscent of that. Very dream sequence-y, very like dream logic-y. And then it's funny because the last page implies that there's like a plot and characters with drivers and that they want things and they have plans and machinations for what has just happened. And I'm like, really? Like, how did we get to there from here? Like, that kind of threw me. So
I think that's a very good analysis. Like, I think I had that kind of thought. I was like, wait, what was that? Did I miss a thing? And I really tried not to, because right away I was like, oh, I'm not going to like this, but I didn't want to, I tried really hard to give it. It doesn't mean I went back and read it again. But it meant that I read it carefully, and I mean, I can absolutely see there's going to be like, oh, this was beautiful. Like it made me feel something. I guess, I don't know, but it didn't me.
Ratings on Doctor Strange: Fall Sunrise, number one from Trad Moore, Heather Moore, Clayton Cowles. Out of five, I'm going to give it a 2.25, 2.25.
I think I can go all the way up to 2.5, but no higher.
1.75, and that entire rating is based on the fact that I believe a thoughtful and concerted effort was made. I don't think it was half-assed. I don't think it was dumb. I think that he was trying to do something thoughtfully, and I just don't know what it is.
Are you sticking with it?
No.
No.
I just removed it from my iPad, so that means no. There you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can vote to add a book to the rundown. It's also where you can help.
It's called Fall Sunrise. Anyone know why?
Patreon.com/iFanboy is also where you can go support the show. It's our primary means of support. We thank everyone who becomes a patron. You obviously don't have to keep listening to the show. The show will never be behind a paywall, but we do enjoy the community that's come up around Patreon, the patrons. And also, they've also unlocked a lot of shows that we do now that everyone gets to enjoy. So if you become a patron, you get to directly support the show. You get to unlock new shows for everyone to enjoy, and you get to become part of a great community. Those are the three pillars of our patron. Thank you very much. We have a document going around with new stretch goals that we have to discuss, but it's going around and our goal is to announce those in January. So their new stretch goals for the Patreon are coming and we are looking forward to that. You can also support us in various other ways at ifanboy.threadless.com. We're in holiday season time, holiday shopping time, and what better time to get your niece a t-shirt that says Clint is dead on it. Your niece may not know what the hell's going on, but that's what makes the gift a great gift. So all those shirts we have can be found at fm.threadless.com. We have 12 designs. We thank everyone who tech checks those out. fm.com/support is our direct donation via PayPal link. fm.com/Amazon is where you can find our Book Split books as well as a general shopping link. Again, it is holiday shopping time, and if you're going to be using Amazon, that's a great way to go and help the show. And bookshop.org is our partner that helps support local bookstores. I remember just got an email from Bookshop saying how much they got donated this year. I think it was $20 million went to local bookstores, something like that. It was in that area. So if you see bookshop.org links on our page, usually with the Booksplode shows, because they really only do collections, you can check out books that way. I do most of my shopping for books now via bookshop.org, and it makes me feel good inside. And it just adds to the stack of books that I'll never read. And that's how you can help support the show. Thanks everyone who did that throughout the year. We appreciate it. And now, if you are a patron at the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show. And this week, Ryan is going to bestow it upon you.
This power is for Robert, who wants to be the very best. And to accomplish that goal, Robert has a bag of special balls that he can use to capture any animal he encounters that he hits with one of the balls. And the ball snaps open and absorbs the animal. And provided the animal doesn't escape, Robert now has that animal and can control that animal with his bag of special balls.
How is that not Pokemon?
What are you talking about?
Connor, is that okay?
I mean, that still feels like a lawsuit, which has to be said that Ryan is not affiliated with that Fanboy Enterprises in any way.
It's just a bag of special balls, and
Connor, don't perjure yourself in this instance.
He's not out catching pocket monsters. He's catching regular animals that he encounters in his everyday life.
Ryan is a random person who happened to be on this call. We decided to invite on the show.
He is an independent contractor.
Exactly.
He's responsible for whatever it is that he says.
They're magical balls.
I hear you, pal.
He's got to hit the animal with them. It's not
easy. How do you control the ball? I don't know any of the background here. How do you control an animal with a ball?
Well, so you the ball starts off small, and then it gets big, and then you throw it at the animal, and then it goes doot, 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 and then you either capture the animal or it escapes. And if you capture it, then you start to form a bond with it by forcing it to participate in dogfighting.
This is just getting worse as you talk about it.
I want to say to you that, like, when I said, isn't that just Pokemon, I wasn't being facetious. It wasn't like, oh, I got him. I was like, wait, is that what Pokemon is? Like, you just explained Pokemon to me. Like, I put it all together from the bits that are going around my house. But there's cards everywhere. I'm like, do you guys play the game? No. Okay. We think the animals are cute. Fair enough.
Well, Dad doesn't have time to help you with that because he's got to go play Marvel Snap.
I won my round, by the way.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where every patron who gives the $5 or higher level can get a superpower live on the show. Thanks, Robert, for being a patron. We can do an email. We're not too far over. Chris from Parts Unknown says, after listening to the last all email episode, I thought of a question for you that has perplexed me. Why do you archive all the unanswered emails from year to year? I propose a new segment or extra podcast if Ryan would be up to it, since he has enjoyed being on the show more and more. To offload the years of unanswered questions, you could make a segment called Haupt Takes, where Ryan rapidly answers an agreed amount of questions.
I do like the idea of saying we're going to answer questions from 2008. Do no research.
We were originally going to do that during the pandemic when there were no comics, but we ended up having more content than we knew what to do with. So we didn't. We did that for one show. We answered an old email, and then we abandoned it because we didn't need it.
Yeah, and my thought was, I mean, have you heard how many special edition shows are already coming out? Connor's got a spreadsheet for that schedule already. I'm not sure squeezing more in. And in terms of answering questions rapid fire succinctly, have you met me? That's not something I'm super skilled at.
Ryan has good self-awareness, yes. Yeah.
I like to explain things in detail, and that takes time.
Why do we do it? Because we like to start the year fresh. Even though the questions can often be evergreen. We like to sort of keep them, in the present. I can't think of words. I haven't hardly any sleep.
What's the drop down too far? Like, it's just too much. It's logistically, it's just difficult. So we every once in a while you got to clear out your house of junk, and so some of the stuff it's like you keep stuff and you go, this could be useful someday, but eventually you just have a bunch of pile of stuff that could be useful which you never use. I think it's that.
And a lot of the emails are like, hey, 4 episodes ago you said this thing, and it's like, if we're reading that a year later, it's like, well, you don't remember what we said, and it's
or that same week.
Or even like, hey, this book, the emails are often about things happening in the now, and we like to keep those conversations as close to now as possible, even though, again, some of it's evergreen. But it's just a way of sort of clearing the decks and starting each year fresh.
Yeah.
Which is
our way of organizing.
And also, like, part of the fun of the questions is that's like a more open discussion between whoever's on the show that week. And so just having one person, me or whoever, go through and do those is, I think, would be less entertaining than people anticipate.
Could you imagine me being on that show and having and not being able to add anything? Speaking of self-awareness, I'd be like, it's terrible.
It's unfortunate. We would love to be able to answer everybody's questions. And back when we were doing this full time, we tried to respond to everyone who didn't get on the show, but we just can't do it now.
I remember when that fell apart. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Well, there were hundreds and hundreds of emails.
Yes,
it was just like, it was becoming a full-time situation. But, it is what it is. It is what it is. It's a way to keep the show fresh. So thanks for writing in, Chris, from Parts Unknown. He wrote it at contact@fanboy.com. If you want to get in the show, listen, we have only a couple shows left, so you still have some time, but you may want to hold your questions.
No, I feel like if someone has a burning question from this year that hasn't been answered yet, I mean, while you're listening to this now, go look at your sent email, find that question, and just schedule an email for January 1st.
Tell you what. If you have an email that's for Ryan, I want you to put outtakes.
There you go. In the subject line.
And we're going to pronounce it like outtake, but it's outtake.
Outtakes. So this is what I get. Instead of getting my Ranger Rotunda, my Power Pavilion, I get the help take platform, the help take Apple box.
We do have a couple more shows. So if you still have a chance to get on this year's shows, but yes, you may want to look and see and resend that in January.
There's nothing to stop you from resubmitting a question.
Right. No, there isn't. I mean, if you had a burning question that didn't get answered and you want to bring it back to the top of the stack, just send it again.
Although I will, if it was from the current year, I will probably remember it.
We'll remember it. And because we're on it and we're talking about it, like, there are questions that are good questions, and there are questions that are bad questions. There's good questions that are bad for the show.
Yeah.
And we read all the questions for sure because we really want one that's good for the show. But there's all sorts of reasons where it isn't because you wrote a stupid question or whatever. It wouldn't play right.
Will this question lead to an interesting discussion? Is the main goal. And sometimes you ask a really good question that won't lead to an interesting discussion, or you ask a question, but it requires you to write 1,000 words to properly explain it. And that's not good for the show either. So it just, there's a lot of considerations.
Or you write a question where we know Josh is going to put his foot in his mouth and we try to protect him.
That's why we never have a eugenics question on the show.
Well, earlier you said that the woman's always the bad guy. And I was like, yeah.
So contact@fanboy.com. So let us talk about the schedule now that we just mentioned it.
That was a joke.
We are reaching the end of November into December. Out now on the feed, you can go back a bit and find our Black Panther Wakanda Forever discussion, which we did get some shit for, but not as much as I was expecting. But we did get some for Josh and Paul and I's take on Black Panther Wakanda Forever. We also, right behind the show, we had our, speaking of emails, we had our Media Explode Year in Mailbag episode where we into the Media Explode bag and we cleared out as much as we could in that episode. And that was actually really fun. We went like 10 minutes per email on that show. Mm. We were yappy
that motherfuckers.
So we didn't get through as many as I was hoping, but it ended up being fun discussions. This week, fingers crossed, there's going to be a Battle of the Super Sons review with Ryan and Paul and I. That was the plan, and something may have come up that will keep us from doing it. Fingers crossed. If it doesn't come out this week, we will get it to you the first week of January. I realize that's like 2 months after it came out, but it's just this is the cursed show, and it's nothing to do with the fact that it stars Damien. Just this show is cursed. So what do we have after that? We have two more picks of the week, 858, 859 coming out in December. We have a Booksplode coming out in between those two shows. We're talking about Namor Visionaries, John Byrne, Volume 1. It's the first 9 issues of the John Byrne early 90s Namor series. You can check that out. All the issues are available on Marvel Unlimited if you want to read those there. And then we end the year on December 18th with the All Media Year-End Roundup. And that's the final schedule for the year. We'll be back with New Pick of the Week, episode 860, in January, January 8th. And that is the holiday schedule.
That would lead to me. You can go over to... Hey, can I take a second? I know it's like relatively long, but it's Thanksgiving, and I wanted to. Thanks to everybody, you guys especially. I've had a not fun last handful of months. The show is like, I'm so thankful that it exists, and that you guys do, and that people are listening to it. I've had employment issues, but the outpouring of support and kind words and even like effective things from iFanboy listeners, like there are people out there who made significant impacts and helped. There was a guy, Rob, who like helped me with my resume and my cover letters, and because he had worked in that field and he knew more, and it was extremely helpful. I'm pretty sure a listener out there is, you know, going to be responsible for helping me end this crisis. Guy I don't know, a guy who's just listened to us, put me, you know, in a position to you know, have a win. And it means the world to me. If we're talking about, I mean, the patrons, you supported my family over this time. And I mean, how lucky am I, you know, that I get to do this thing. I was thinking about it yesterday, Thanksgiving. And I was like, oh my God, I'm actually having actual thankful thoughts. And I wanted to make sure I said it, because it's one thing to post it on Discord or be vague about it. But everybody who has reached out and been helpful, it's been extremely impactful and helpful. So thank you. Anyway, iFanboy.com. You can find all of our shows, Vast History of Comic Book Writing there. We have writers. They are talented. They wrote things. Those things will exist as long as there is the internet to exist them on. That's not the correct word. Facebook.com/iFanboy, at iFanboy on Twitter, at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and Ryan Haupt on Instagram, and at Haupt on Twitter. How long are you going to stick with that, buddy?
It's so hard to turn away from the train wreck. Like it's an interesting time just to lurk and watch what's happening. But man, yeah, I'm close. I'm close.
If you do start another account on something else, I'm pretty sure it has to be Help Takes. So there you go. You go to our youtube.com/iFanboy. Subscribe to that if you'd like to. All of our old video shows are there. I'm so pushy. Subscribe to it if you'd like to. It honestly almost makes no difference to us.
Click that bell, smash that subscribe button.
We post this show there every week in terms of updated content. So if that works for you as a way to listen to it, then by all means, please do.
What does the bell do?
It alerts
don't
you.
Don't answer. I don't want to know.
Help take.
I don't want to know. I actually don't want to know.
Oh, hashtag, man.
Hashtag help
take. I want like a sound effect, like
help take.
If you like this show, consider leaving a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps people find the show. It helps the algorithm. Feed that algorithm beast one last time. And we appreciate that. Even better than that is word of mouth. Tell your friends. If people ask about podcasts you should be listening to or they should be listening to, it's always nice when people say iFanboy. So thank you for that. And that is it for our Thanksgiving episode. We made it in just about time, too. And that's amazing. My name is Connor, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Ryan, for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to get off this recording and go see what all the barking and screaming is about.
That's been a help take.
Help take.
I'm Josh.
I'm Josh.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.